We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2321, and we'll have our committee administrator explain very briefly what that bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 2321 would require the Department of Administrative Services to publish an outline of the governor's budget report in a newspaper in every county on the Sunday before a legislative session starts. And the bill outlines what that report should contain. I believe Representative Krupp is here to explain his bill.
Thank you. Representative Krupp, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37. I do appreciate the opportunity to share a very simple but I think important idea that we should consider as a state as a matter of policy, and that is that the opportunity to publish once every 2 years in every Sunday newspaper that is available, which doesn't quite cover the entire state, but most of the state, a condensed version of what the governor is proposing for the budget. And the reason we use the governor's as opposed to anything else is because we think it's important to do this before the session starts. And in reality, our budgets never look really vastly different from the governor's anyway. Now, you should, all of you, have a photocopy of basically what I'm proposing. It, again, is a very simple outline that shows what we spent 2 years ago, what the governor's proposing that we spend, and any percentage of increase or decrease. Now, why would we want to do this? Well, I have three reasons that I think really make the case. Number one is I think that it is important that the people of the state have an opportunity to look at an early look at how their money is being proposed to be spent for the next 2 years. That in turn produces another benefit. And that's it stimulates discussion and awareness out in the community, the people that we all serve. Now, I think that's valid because that will no doubt bring a greater citizen input to the process of sharing with us, their elected representatives, how they feel about certain budgets that are increased, decreased, depending on their level of awareness and depending on their level of interest. And I think that's good because it also builds either support or resistance to certain budgetary concerns that are enunciated in the budget. And the third thing is it reduces a complex budget. And yes, you can go online and you can see the governor's proposed budget, and it is printed and so on and so forth. This simply reduces it to a very readable, short, condensed version that is not only good for the taxpayers, but frankly is good for us as elected representatives. We really are not provided with any copy of anything that's as condensed as this. It just gives you a very quick overall look at what the budget may look like. So I think because democracy is so important and that we are always wanting, all of us, wanting to be cognizant of how we are spending the taxpayers' resources, and we ought to give them a great opportunity to see it, even perhaps some of those folks who really don't have as great an interest in the political process that we're engaged here in coming into session every 2 years. I think it's a great opportunity to, again, stimulate discussion, an opportunity for those people to voice their concerns and have interaction with us. And I know we're all busy and we don't want to do things to increase our workload, but I think this has very, very positive and tangible results. I have prepared, probably one of the questions you're thinking in your mind is, in light of a very tight budget, what will this cost us? Well, to put a half-page ad in all of the papers that publish a Sunday paper, half a page ad, and this was based on 2 years ago, because I don't quite have an update yet, is somewhere around $28,000. It's not an extraordinarily amount of money, and we're often listening to people who make statements to us that democracy is not cheap. No, it is not, either in blood or money. But I think it is a great opportunity for the state to put out in a very clear and concise form exactly what is being proposed as to how their money, their resources are going to be spent. And with that, I would ask that you would look favorably on this legislation and pass it out of the committee, and would certainly be happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Representative. This photocopy is taken from where?
This is a document that I had legislative fiscal actually put together for me 2 years ago, and they are currently putting together an identical document, simply changing the numbers that reflect what we budgeted last session and what the governor's proposing, and again, the increases or decreases that may be there. This is just an example of what it is that we're proposing, and the state did prepare that for us.
Let me ask you, was this prepared for general circulation, or was it just prepared for you and you could use as you would?
It is was just prepared for me. However, I have circulated it widely at town hall meetings and am more than happy to share it with anyone who would like to send it to their newspaper or anyone else who's interested.
Are you comfortable that this, in this present format, is basically honest, straightforward, a good representation of what we're doing?
I believe it is, because it's a numbers business that we're engaged with. Constitutionally, our Constitution says that the only thing that we are mandated to do when we come into session is deal with the budget. And I think that it shows the bare numbers. And when you see an increase or you see a decrease and you're the average lay citizen out there, you're probably going to wonder, well, why in the Criminal Justice Commission 2 years ago did we go from $679,000 to $20 million, which is a 3,000% increase, basically? That would probably generate some calls from your constituents. Well, the benefit of that is that, if you recall, last session, we worked very closely with the governor. One of the governor's initiatives was juvenile justice. And here's an opportunity for us to make the case or have interaction with a constituent who would look at that and say, wow, that's an incredible increase, or wow, that's an unbelievable decrease. Why are you doing that? And I think that's positive always in this process to have that kind of interaction.
Thank you. We have questions. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Crump, if we're going to do this, do you think it might also be good to put an end to session, what the legislature did with the governor's proposed budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I certainly have no problems with that. In essence, you do... even though it's not a side-by-side comparison, and I know what you're driving at, but that's essentially what you have in the first column. It's really what we ended up with. And if people would follow this on a regular basis, let me say this clearly and up front. This is not meant in any way to cast aspersions upon the governor's budgeting process. That's not the point behind this document. And that's why I would have no problems with any modification to that issue. The point of this whole exercise is that, again, to show the taxpayers what we're doing with their money on a percentage increase or decrease basis.
Thank you. Representative Garrard.
Representative Crump, would there be any other information along with the budget items and the numbers that would be published with this? As an example, where to go on the Internet if you want to see the full governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, no, I have not included that. However, I think as we have gotten more and more into the Internet and more Oregonians are making themselves available, as many are listening to us right now on the Internet, that might be a great idea to perhaps have in bold letters at the bottom of this document in the newspaper for additional information, contact, or you can look on the state's website. I think that's a great suggestion.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Krupp, one thing that isn't included here is what would represent a current service level budget, which includes inflation and growth due to population and things like that, so that, and I'm hypothetically just taking the first one, the state school fund going up by 7%, it may have done that merely by the combination of inflation and increased number of children. And so looking at a 7% increase doesn't tell you anything. I think the real increases would show up, or the real decreases would show up, if you compared it to a current service level projection. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative March, and thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. I appreciate that. This is based on current service level, because these are the governor's budget based on that you will see in your individual ways and means binders when you get to a particular agency. It isn't designed to get into the detail that you're asking about, and here's why. Because it's designed to stimulate questions so that people who have that question will call you or me, and we can explain that process to them. It also is designed because in our society today, there's so much competing for our time and attention, to be just relatively short, concise, and easy to read, so that we can, again, so that someone will look at that and say, wow, the state's budget. Now let's look at this. And then when they do have questions, they can access either calling you and doing it. It is not designed to be in the detail that would answer those types of questions. It would just be, we would might as well send out the governor's budget to do that.
Thank you. Committee, what I would like to do is to put a halt to this public hearing and move on to our next public hearing so we can move Representative Walker. Representative Krupp, we will we'll call you back if we need some more amplification, and we probably will, but I want to thank you for your testimony. Interesting ideas. We will certainly continue to work on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2321, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2171, Representative Vicki Walker, and I will ask our committee administrator to explain something about this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Walker and Lynn Rossick from the Secretary of State was also joined here. This modifies the timeline for filing an acceptance nomination with the Secretary of State for a write-in candidate, and I believe I have some amendments from Representative Walker that I'll pass out while she gets going.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and colleagues. I'm Representative Vicki Walker from House District 41 in Eugene, Springfield, and I come to you with this bill today as a result of my own candidacy. I had an opponent who successfully got enough write-ins to get on the ballot to make him a candidate for office, and he was a write-in of a major political party. When I called the Secretary of State's office to inquire as to when my opponent would have to accept or deny the nomination, because in the newspaper he had said, well, I might do it, well, I might not, the Secretary of State said, well, gee, there is no timeline, but we're going to arbitrarily set it at 30 days. And so that's when I decided that I needed to send a letter off to Legislative Council, which I did on July 1st, and Leg Council responded back a very interesting response, which was that basically the statute is silent, but the Secretary of State is required not later than the 30th day after the primary election to deliver a certificate of nomination, and that's also the same day that it's required that the candidate accept the nomination, which is impractical to do for both the candidate and the Secretary of State. So we drafted language to put this in statute. I believe it should be in statute. It should not be an arbitrary deadline set by the Secretary of State. And then upon consultation with them on Friday, they had some amendments they wanted in the bill. Those are the dash ones before you. And I will let let their office speak to you about that. But what we have done is extended the timeline. We gave till the 35th day for the candidate to accept or reject, and that was not enough time for the Secretary of State's office to process the paperwork. Also, they wanted to extend this to counties as well as state, and so at this point, I'm going to turn that over and have her talk to you about how that works.
Ms. Rossick, welcome. If you'd identify yourself, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lynn Rossick from the State Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office. Appreciate being able to testify here on House Bill 2171. As Representative Walker has aptly pointed out, in fact, the statute didn't have any deadline for these acceptances of write-in nominations, although, in fact, the person does have to accept in writing to their filing officer. And so there is no objection on the part of our office to this bill whatsoever. We did have a few suggestions that are reflected in the Dash 1 amendments to extend that time a little more because, as you know, we receive the information from the counties 20 days after the election, and we actually canvass and send out final results on the 30th day after the election. That's both the primary and the general elections. And so to require the person, if we send out our paperwork to the write-in nominee on the 30th day after the election and then to have them have to have that back in by the 35th day, we just didn't feel it was quite enough time. So we've asked to have that extended to 45 days. So we'll basically have 2 weeks after that's mailed out. And I think that would be enough time, but it also gives us some finality with in terms of that particular nomination. If the person does not return and file that by the 45th day after the election, then we would consider that nomination vacant and it would go to the party. And so that way the party has some time during the summer to fill that nomination. And the other change that is made by the Dash 1 amendments that we request to be drafted for your consideration is to essentially extend this concept to all filing officers rather than have it be focused simply on the Secretary of State as a filing officer. One of the things that we like to do in election law is to make things kind of as uniform and logical as possible, and there didn't seem to be any reason, if this was a good idea, why it wouldn't be a good idea at all levels of filing officers. So that was our other suggestion. We've received word, which I can convey to you from the Oregon Association of County Clerks, that they support the Dash 1 amendment, and so I can pass that word on to you as well.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Devlin.
Yes. Question for the Secretary of State's representative. Could you walk me through just briefly in this particular case where someone's a write-in for a nomination? Now, this is a rare circumstance, but where you might have to have a recount in that, how these dates would fit into a recount process in terms of you have dates that speak of from the date of the election. Could you still account for that given the dates that are in here?
Right. Well, that's an interesting question because, Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, Lynn Rossick again, I assume, let's talk about, for instance, an automatic recount. Say if you had a one-vote difference between two write-in candidates or it was a tie between two write-in candidates, that process for recounting that particular race would not begin until after the certification had occurred. We would have to order that recount, and that would be done in the period of time after the 30th day after the election. But in the case of a recount, I mean, all the deadlines don't really work in that case, but the recount deadlines kind of move into their place. I don't think it's really a problem. I mean, in the same way the law right now requires us to send a certificate of nomination to the winning candidate after the election, but as we know, in the case of a too close of a race, we end up having to recount it, and then we send them the certificate after the recount is over.
In that particular case, can we actually have Mr. Ruttlinger, should this bill, I anticipate this bill coming back, actually, to the committee, but just to clarify that there is no problem in terms of the coordination of those dates. It's a rare circumstance, mm-hmm. but I've had parties that have lost elections by one vote. And, I mean, write-ins are normally low vote totals, and I've seen cases where it's 50 votes against 51 votes,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which wouldn't actually meet the automatic recount. But just to clarify.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Gardner.
Mr. Rossick, just for clarification's sake, this would go to the 45th day. Then how long does the party have to inject a candidate beyond that point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, you're saying if the 45th day passes and then no one returns it.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, our office would notify the party involved, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, that we had a vacancy in that nomination. And essentially, what happens is the party can take whatever period of time they feel comfortable taking. We have to have a nominee by the end of the summer when the voters pamphlet deadline comes up, and also the certification of the ballot for the fall. But there isn't any other particular deadline during that period.
Just to follow up. Is that there is no, in law, then there is no defined ending date other than your own rule for the, you know, the voters pamphlet statement when that's due?
Right. Chair Wilson, Representative Gardner, the statute that is going to create the absolute deadline for the party is the date that we have to certify the state candidates to the counties for printing on the ballot, and that's 61 days before the election. But usually it's in early September.
Okay. Thank you for the questions. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Mr. Rettlinger, could you provide us with some written information that addresses Representative Devlin's questions? Thank you. Appreciate that very much. All right, we will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2171. And we'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2321. And I'd like Tom Gallagher, ONPA, to report, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. In general, this is not a bill which we would come in and support or opposition to because it's an economic benefit to the newspapers, and that's not our purpose in being here. What I wanted to do, though, was talk a little bit about how this would work and some of the pluses and the minuses of using newspaper publication. In the first place, I think that if it's a paid advertisement, people can select where it goes. It doesn't go in the back in the public record section in small type and get buried away in the back of the paper. I think that would be much more beneficial as a paid ad, that they could select a spot for it, highlight it in the paper, and make it in readable format for people to look at. The second thing is that newspapers, especially the major newspapers in the state, invariably do articles on the budget. And there will be articles, explanatory articles of some degree, however they were reported, on the budget in the budget process, and they would be there in some conjunction at the same time, perhaps, or around the same time in the paper. So that somebody else had mentioned that reference to websites, and I think that one of the things that could be included in the bill is that article stories or the ad itself could either reference the government website where the entire budget could be published, so that people could use the newspaper ad or the newspaper story as a link to more information. Or secondly, that you could request that the newspapers put it on their own website, which are used in conjunction with the stories. So there would be a way for people to get to go from the small piece that would be in the advertisement to the larger piece. And that could be a value to a number of groups and organizations that interact with the legislature. The third thing I'd like to say is that we have been working since last session with the broadcasters and others looking at the public records statutes. And what is coming to light from our analysis, from the newspaper publishers' analysis, is one astounding fact. The overwhelming number of mandatory public records are actually court records. Those things that are in statute that say your will, probate, or class actions, or closure of a cemetery and where to locate the caskets. This whole concept of adequate notice backed up by public record. What is not part of the public record statutes or requirement for local governments to post is information about meetings, dates and times of meetings. Let me use a good example. Metro puts advertisements in the paper for most of their meetings, and that's they pay for that. That's done not under a requirement. That's done because they think that's a valuable way to communicate. In our discussion with the broadcasters, we thought it was an excellent idea to use the broadcast media as a way to publicize notices. It can be done very quickly and very effectively, both on radio and television, a segment of public notices. But there's no requirement that local government post these. And I'm not talking about the revenue side of it. I'm talking about, and we had proposed in one of the work groups, that we actually go through the statutes and take a look at those arcane 1850 publication notices that were better done some other way or really weren't part of the culture in 2001 to put in the back page of a newspaper, and to try to highlight those pieces of government that actually were usable and important to people on a daily basis, anybody who is involved in government. So whether or not you pass this bill the way that it's structured, I think that there are ways in which using newspapers or using broadcasts can be very valuable in getting the information out to the general public in a usable form as it's backed up by the websites. That's my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Garrard.
Mr. Gallagher, nowhere in the bill does it mention whether this is display or classified advertising, and rates are different. We were given a total of $28,000 is what it would cost to run it in newspapers, but that can vary a great deal depending on where you put the ad.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, that's exactly true. There are different rate cards for different places, and I think there are, if you work your way through that, there are different ways to put this information, this notice in the paper. You could use the same amount of money and advertise it in a different way and maybe get republication through these other sources, or you could put in the sheet that Representative Krupp had as a way to do it. But I was also thinking of using the newspaper stories as a way to get the website reference and the other reference. You're not going to print in the newspaper story the whole budget, but they certainly are going to highlight the newsworthy aspects of that budget. So I think they're kind of two different purposes, and you're right, his pricing would depend on where it was put.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you think it would be just as effective if there was one line of explanation of any kind following the numbers? It seems to me that they're just looking at the numbers by themselves without any point of reference. Not only would they be somewhat, they would certainly bring about questions from the reader.
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, you have really hit on the crux of this issue. I think Representative Krupp here is trying to get some information out to people that triggers a further inquiry and a further investigation and more general voter knowledge of what's happening. I think that's positive for every level of government. I know that you, as on local government level, in your community, we're very involved in using public notice and getting public involvement in your issues. I think that's what we're talking about here. How it's actually structured is not something I think that I would be the best person to answer on, because a little bit of it's politics, a little bit of about what you want to communicate, a little bit of it is how it's heard by the different audiences. And I'm just saying that generally, I think people have relatively little accurate information on the budget, and anything that people can do generally to get more information on that is valuable. But structuring it the way you suggested works.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Next to testify will be George Dunford, Department of Administrative Services. Mr. Dunford is the only other individual signed up to testify on this bill. Is there anyone else who chooses to do it? Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Dunford. Identify yourself on the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is George Dunford. I'm here for the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division to testify on House Bill 2321. I'll be brief. As it is currently written, you are not adding any cost to the department's budget. We have the information. We're happy to provide it. We can provide it in a number of different ways, through websites, newspapers, television, however you'd like us to do that. So that's not an issue. What is at issue, I think, maybe for your discussion and deliberation, and certainly not ours necessarily, because I'm not here either pro or con. I'm neutral. The department's neutral on this. But I think you should consider probably whether or not this is a good use of the cost. I answer many, many questions throughout session and certainly shortly after session is over from many newspapers regarding the budget, both the governor's recommended and finally the legislatively adopted and approved budget. In my opinion and experience, it is generally newsworthy. These stories are lengthy, and they always ask me for many charts and graphs. This actually is a fairly simplistic rendition of the governor's recommended budget. The only thing I would suggest you consider adding to it is a current service level column, so people can get an idea of what it costs to carry forward on a current service level basis programs which are currently being delivered at the state level. So, in summary, my suggestion would be this. At paragraph 2, line 7, instead of the word publish, I would suggest provide. And also in paragraph 2, line 8, strike the word in and insert the word to. We would provide this information to all the newspapers in the state, if you'd like, not just those that provided on that publish a Sunday edition. If I remember right, there are 87 papers in the state as defined in ORS 193010. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in its current form, without showing the current service level, it would be somewhat misleading to the public if we just published these two columns without a current service level column?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marsh, I wouldn't suggest that it's misleading because the numbers are factual. But it sort of bridges the gap between an explanatory line for each one of the 105 agencies that we'd be listing. Because it gives the reader, and you can define current service level, or you can list current service level differently, the cost to provide current services, if you will, not just current service level. But if you had the current service level, that would give the reader something to really compare it to, not just the approved budget. Because the approved budget, for budget purposes, as you're probably already aware, is the legislatively adopted budget, which is what you folks will do at the conclusion of the session, as modified by emergency boards and other administrative acts through April.
Thank you. Further? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Committee, this is an interesting idea. I would like to, I'm not going to work it today, obviously, but I do want to take some time for us to contemplate that. And we have an opportunity to talk among ourselves, certainly not in quorum. I'd appreciate that. If you have any thoughts about that, if you'd like to see me about that, feel free to do that. I'll undoubtedly bring it back as a public hearing and possible work session again one of these days soon. But in the meantime, before we do that, if you would like to talk to me about it, I'd appreciate that. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2321, and then we've got a little bit more work to do. I'd like to open a work session to introduce a couple of bills, and we'll introduce LC 2325. Tara, would you tell us just a little bit about that? And again, this does not signify your overall affection or dislike for one of these bills. We're simply going to adopt it as a committee bill and deal with it later.
Can we express that anyway, Mr. Chair?
Just go checking.
Go ahead.
It'll be news for me.
Mr. Chair, LC 2325 was requested by the Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. That's quite honest. It has something to do with manufactured dwellings and floating homes. Didn't spend a lot of time.
That would be good. Thank you. And we'll entertain a motion on that.
Move to introduce this committee bill.
Representative Devlin moves LC 2325 as a committee bill. Do we have any discussion? Any objection? Adopted. And LC 2419.
Mr. Chair, members, as I understand from the chair, this is a backup bill for the campaign contributions filing statements. Placeholder, so to speak.
Thank you. This bill, LC 2429, as it's coming back to me now, is one that has been composed as a possible statutory remedy to the issue of campaign contributions during session. This came from one of our members. Asked if we would introduce that as a committee bill. I haven't looked at it very closely, but that's what it purports to take care of. All right, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Devlin.
Move the committee's introduction of LC 2419.
Representative Devlin moves LC 2419 as a committee bill. Do we have any discussion? Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, just to reiterate your earlier comments, this is not an endorsement of the bill, and we reserve possibility of opposing or favoring.
Absolutely.
One question, Mr. Chair, if this is a placeholder bill, do we have a placeholder relating clause for it as well, or not? Just kidding.
I'm just thinking about that.
Something broad.
Yeah. sure, no. All right, thank you. It's been moved. Do we have any further discussion?
These are too narrow.
All right, no discussion. Any objections? All right, adopted. All right, and we will close the work session, and we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
This relates.